Okay. No pets and animals reaching the window of the copywriting company are allowed in the shop. This includes puppies, kittens, birds of any kind, snakes, lizards, rodents, marsupials, primates. Except humans. This also includes the above pets hidden in coats, purses, or boxes. Seeing eye dogs are allowed by law. Thank you. Here is... There's a... Tables outside of the copy... This is in the opposite window, the left side of the roasting company. Tables outside of the Aptos Copy Roasting Company are only for the use of the Aptos Copy Roasting Company patrons who purchase drinks or food items. A cup of water is not considered a purchase. The outside tables are purchased by the owners of the Aptos Copy Roasting Company for use of their customers on the patio in front of their shop. Because there is a very small amount of seating, there's a limit of 45 minutes to sit at tables after your purchase. After 45 minutes, you should vacate the table so that someone else has a chance to use it, even if it appears that no one around is to take your place. All the customers have a chance to sit outside if they wish. Purchasing another item does not give you another 45 minutes at the tables. Those people who visit the Aptos Copy Roasting Company for more than once a day for purchases consider the tables if 5 or 6 hours have elapsed between visits, but again, for only the 45-minute limit. Doorways, walkways, and sidewalks into and in front of the Aptos Copy Roasting Company must be kept clear of crowds, packages, bicycles, and pets. You may be asked to leave the tables, patio, or shop for reasons including, but not limited to, staying past limited time at the tables, are not courteous to other customers, are rough housing, spitting, littering, and not respectful of the Copy Roasting Company employees or its property, and of course the Aptos Copy Roasting Company reserves the right to refuse service to anyone. And it's an open area with no tables, I noticed. There are some planter or two and some garbage cans.
So we have two views sitting on the green bar that I guess was put in to prevent you from sitting on the flat surface underneath the green bar, which is sort of a low retaining wall. What's your name?
James Eason.
And you're?
Chris Gamble.
And are you guys frequent patrons here of the Copy Roasting Company?
Every day.
Yes, we are.
And how long have you been aficionados of this place?
How long did you say we've been hanging out here?
I've been here for about 2.5 years.
I've been here for about 2.5, 3 years myself.
And have you noticed a change in attitude towards young people?
A sheriff came up to me a couple days ago with my friend. We were sitting in front of the movie theater waiting to go into a movie. Mm-hmm. And he came and started accusing me of being on heroin.
Which sheriff was this?
This was Samuel Watson, W-A-T-S-O-N.
What's up, Watson, so to speak.
Yeah. And he came down and told me, my friend, that he was coming to see, he wanted to meet people who were hanging out at Rancho and be part of the community, and he just started harassing me immediately, accusing me of being on heroin and everything. Mm-hmm. And I told him, all I ever do is smoke pot, officer, I don't touch crap like that. I rolled up my sleeves, no track marks, I didn't have anything on me that would suggest that I was doing heroin.
How long ago was this?
This was on Friday.
There's, we have a DARE vehicle over here.
Yeah.
DARE to keep kids off of drugs.
And then they come up and start accusing me of instantly being on drugs.
Now, so is this a new phenomenon, or was this happening before?
It happened a couple times. Friends, who was it that got arrested for playing hacky sack right here?
Well, actually, me and Damien almost got arrested for hacky sacking over there.
And they weren't giving cops any problems.
Yeah, we were just hanging out, hacky sacking, having fun, and they told us we had to leave and stop hacky sacking, and that was just the first alarm, so we kept hacking after we left, and they called the cops on us. And
how long ago was this?
This was about 6 months ago, I'd say. And
they being?
The officers, I don't remember which officer it was.
First alarm security is the private security force that kind of controls
that.
Yeah.
To patrol it. Yeah, it's a private security company.
And you have also a sheriff's station, which is fairly recent, what, about a year or two old?
Yeah, that used to be my friend's Angels Bearing Gift Shop.
6 months to a year, actually.
Police bearing tickets.
Yeah, and harassment.
So, you were here before that period of time. Was there a difference in the way people were treated before?
Everybody was much more relaxed. It wasn't so, I'd call it, militiatized now. As to where they're trying to force everybody to leave that's a youth here, even though we are patrons.
Right.
I remember I used to, that shop used to be my friend's shop, as I said, Angel Bearing's Gifts. I used to go in there and hang out with them. Everybody was just friends here. Everybody was smiling. Hey, how you doing? And now, hardly, as you can see, hardly anybody's here in the middle of summertime.
Well, what do you interpret this change of policy to? Was there several rapes? Was there a huge increase in violence?
There's never been any violence here that I know. Any fight that was instigated, there was never blows thrown. It was always broken up by patrons such as me and Chris before it came to blows at Rancho, because we didn't want problems here. And there's never been a fight here that I've known of since I've been hanging out here. What about you, Chris?
There's been a couple, but it's usually from other people who don't hang out here. They just come here randomly and they start shit with us, but there's barely ever anything like that. It's mostly chill. At least we are.
I see a man with a beard and a kind of a white cap over there. Jerry Henry, I think his name is. You know this guy?
I do.
And how long have you known him?
I've known him for about 2.5 years, 3 years now, as long as I've been hanging out here.
Yeah, what kind of a fellow is he?
He's a great guy. He's, I don't know, he's kind. He tries to stand up for his rights and our rights. And he's just being railroaded by the police and First Alarm and these businesses.
It should be noted that the man speaking, the youth speaking, was talking to me in a group about 100 feet away from where Jerry Henry was sitting. We were talking in front of the coffee roasting company over from the liquor store. Jerry Henry is not allowed to be in the area to talk to these young people there, so he was forced to sit off to the side while we spoke, which made for a sort of a strange situation. He couldn't really involve himself in that conversation directly.
Have you seen this yourself personally?
I have seen a few things, not very much. I try not to be here that often, but I don't know. I haven't seen much.
So, what about you guys, or you folks, I should say? Have you seen much harassment of folks like this? This ragged, hippie-looking guy, Jerry Henry, the vicious
terrorist. And he is the exact opposite of vicious, in my opinion. I've known Jerry for quite some time. He's a very nice guy. He's always polite. I never even heard him cuss at a cop or First Alarm every time they harassed him. Mm-hmm. And he always respected the boundaries that they would set for him here. And I don't know why, but anybody with long hair is automatically looked down upon, or anyone wearing red because it's their favorite color is automatically looked upon as a gangbanger, no matter what their race is. And because I was wearing my black pants, a silver sweatshirt, and my red beanie when the cop was harassing me, I felt just because of the color I was wearing, and I'm not in a gang whatsoever, he was harassing me.
Which cop is this?
Samuel Watson.
So actually, this Deputy Watson is around here a lot.
That's the first time I'd seen him here.
Has anybody had any experience with Sergeant Devereaux?
Oh, everybody knows Sergeant.
I've heard of him. I don't know him personally, but I do know of him.
Yeah, my friend was over here. He was harassing one of my friends for something or another, for hanging out here. And he started threatening to arrest me when I came over to see what was going on. Uh-huh. He's like, I know you're on probation, da da da, and I've never seen this cop before in my life. Uh-huh. But it was Devereaux because I remember the name tag in my face. And he threatened me if I didn't turn around and come back over here, and he was going to immediately arrest me.
I said,
all right, later. Just walked away. And then I came back because I had my friend's bike that he was talking to. I just put it with him. And I said, is my friend going to get arrested? He's like, look, I told you, get the F out of here or else I'm going to arrest you. Uh-huh. And I was like, hey, I'm trying to return my friend's bike. And Blair, known as Lardass, the security guard used to be here, told the cop, he said, hey, I'm one of myself, James Easton. He's told him, Deborah, that I'm one of the good kids, doesn't cause any troubles, and always listens to whatever Blair says if he tells me to leave. And the cops still continue to harass me after that.
Sergeant Deborah is gone from the scene?
Yes.
He is now, I believe, a detective of some sort at the Santa Cruz Police Department.
Really? You moved from the deputies to the city police?
I believe so.
I think he's still on the sheriff's department, I think.
Yeah.
I could be wrong.
I think that he was doing something at the Santa Cruz, but I don't know.
Okay, could be. I have no idea. Actually, I have no clear information. So, you guys have seen a change in the quality of the shopping center in the last couple of years?
Yeah, it's been degrading.
And what do you attribute this to? What is the reason?
I contribute to the militia-style policing that's going on here by the Sheriff's Department, whoever put this up, because they've done it before and then they would take it down. And now it's up. I don't know how long it's going to be up for, if it's ever going to come down again.
Where is the impetus for this coming from? Is it from the police? Is it from the security guards?
It's mostly from the sheriff's department, from what I know. And the merchants have... Has coffee roasting company complained a lot? Do you know, Chris?
Yes. And so has the liquor store. liquor store has become a lot.
Even though we have patrons constantly, I see kids of our age, youths, going in and out of both these places, with going with money in their hand and come out with a product of some sort. And they continue to...
How are younger skateboarders, like those passing by, treated?
They're looked down upon severely because skateboarding is not supposed to be allowed here. But I think people don't look at it, that's their only transportation because they're kids. And it's highly looked down upon here. Bicycles, you can ride anywhere here, but skateboards are looked down upon severely.
How about rollerblades?
Rollerblades are the same as skateboards, and so roller skates.
Yeah. Now, I've heard some rather interesting tales of a woman arrested for, particularly for smoking a cigarette, another woman driven off into the boonies for doing the same.
Oh, did you give him a ticket for smoking a cigarette? How long ago was that, Chris?
Oh, about 5 months ago or something. It was before I was 18, like a month or something before I turned 18.
And you started harassing and gave a ticket for smoking a cigarette.
The reason that the enclosure has been put up is to protect some purple and yellow flowers that have been trampled.
Which one?
What's this for?
Is this for Free Radio Santa Cruz?
That's true.
It's a radio station, 96.3 FM.
Jennifer,
you work here at the Roasting Cabin. And so this sort of enclosed area is to protect the flowers?
Because
there are, I guess, we've heard other explanations from other folks, and we're trying to, you know, get a sense of what's going on.
That's what makes sense to me.
Because why would they want to rope off an area where people could sit down? It wouldn't make much sense.
No, there's other places to sit. We have benches right there in the sun that people could sit if they wanted to sit down.
That's true. There is a bench right in front of the M&M party supplies area. So I'm describing this for the radio.
Actually, there was quite a bit of benching area out of here, I was told,
that
one
got
time.
Carved into with knives. And actually, a whole bench got stolen. So we had to take them away.
So, the first time I've been into the Roasting Company, I'm a regular patron of the Santa Cruz Roasting Company, both the little one and the big one. Mm-hmm. And it's the first time I've been to the Aptos Roasting Company. Were the benches out here for a long period of time before they were taken away? Or?
At least 2 months, I think. I mean, at least 2 months.
And this place has been open for...
I've worked here for a year.
It's been here for at least a year.
At least like 7, 10 years, I think.
Really? Actually, you're not...
It's a well-established place.
It's amazing. You go to one place every night and then you forget the other place, I say. So you've been working here for a year, and you've been a pretty regular worker, been on the scene. So what's the story? I got to ask you the fatal question with Jerry Henry. We've been hearing a lot of different things. Is he why is he persona non grata in the Roasting Company?
Non grata?
Meaning not wanted in the Roasting Company.
I've never worked on a day when they were having trouble with him, but from what I hear from other employees, he's not the only one, by the way. There's actually a list of people. Anybody who comes in and isn't sociable and tends to be on the rude side or disrespectful will be asked not to do business here.
Mm-hmm. So in essence, your understanding, although you never had a personal experience, was that you were told he was rude or something to that effect? Or?
If he's on the non grata list, something was wrong.
And is there a policy? I know there is downtown. I was very impressed with the coffee roasting company downtown. They had a problem with a woman named Jeannie. I don't know if you ever go downtown Santa Cruz. She's sort of hunched over. She rides on her bike. She's sort of a... And you probably know her. She's a pretty famous character. And she had a problem with the owner, who I know. And the owner, you know, I think kicked her out, but then let her back in a month later and told me that she had a policy, I believe this is correct, of reviewing that kind of thing a month later, that people wanted to do that. And I think this also happened with a chess player downtown. Which there was a misunderstanding between a manager and a chess player. I think this is really a great policy that all of Santa Cruz restaurants should adopt, is re-examining this, you know, after a month. I'm wondering, is there a similar policy here that you know?
Sounds like grade school.
Yeah. It does, but I mean, it's better than a year.
I'm not really involved in that, actually. It's more of a management thing.
So you're just sort of one of the slave laborers, so to speak? I wouldn't want to say that, of course, but...
I'm a cashier.
You're a cashier.
And a coffee server.
And you're proud.
Espresso queen.
Yeah, you're an espresso queen. But we won't go into that at this time. So anything you want to say for Free Radio Santa Cruz about this?
I think that it's perfectly logical to protect some landscaping that you've put in that's young until it gets established, especially when that area has been known to be walked across and trampled on. I mean, because you are trying to develop it, you're pouring money into it, it needs to get established. I mean, my stepmom's an avid gardener. They have like 3 acres and she's got like a million flowers out there. She's out there 5 hours a day transplanting and watering and guarding her babies.
So she doesn't grow the wrong kind of flowers.
No, she doesn't. She grows beautiful flowers, not the wrong kind. But I mean, you know, it's their garden. If they've done some recent work and they're trying to protect it for a while.
Is this owned by the liquor store or is this sort of the...
I think that the shopping center owns the sidewalk area.
But you have pointed out that you don't think it's because of the seating areas that are closed off,
no,
because there are other
seating areas. There's seating areas all along here and on those benches there.
Right.
And there's some other benches over by the liquor store.
Now these green...
So that wouldn't make sense.
It should be pointed out that the seating areas she mentioned were forbidden to Jerry Henry because they are closely attached to the coffee roasting company. The seating area that is not closely attached next to the liquor store was specifically fenced off. And I believe it's going to be the claim of Jerry Henry in court, who claims the fencing is a public nuisance, that this was done specifically to stop his congregating with young people there, and that this is reflected in police reports. That hearing, in fact, will be coming up next week, and I'll give you the date of that hearing at the end of this series of interviews.
Hey! Don't go away, I'm going to talk to you guys. These green bars, are they new, these green bars?
No, they've always been here.
So they weren't put in, they were here when you came in a year ago?
They weren't here a year ago.
Yeah. I was always wondering, were they for bicycles, what they were?
They look like a place to lock your bike up.
They do, all over the place, including over there and right on the flat areas right around the corner as well. So I was kind of curious. In Santa Cruz, they put in sort of objects to make certain areas unsittable. I mean, it's admitted, just like they put in flowers along the side of the area to make sure people don't sit down. It's part of that sort of a plan to remove some people that the downtown merchants consider undesirable. I was wondering if there was a similar sort of drive here in Aptos.
I haven't heard of installing objects to discourage sitting.
That's good. I'm glad to hear that. I'm always dismayed when that happens. So. Well, it's Jennifer. Thank you, Jennifer.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the help. Right.
I know that when we had tables out here, we wanted to discourage people, non-patrons, from using them,
right,
so that the people that are walking in and spending their money on our coffee have a place to sit and drink the coffee.
That's reasonable.
Because the tables were owned by us.
Right.
And they got disrespected and we had to take them away. But the benches are owned by the shopping center, I imagine, so you can't really link those to any product that you sell.
Right.
They should be able to sit on them regardless of what they're buying.
You think so?
Well, they do.
Right. And indeed.
She's not buying any coffee and she's sitting on the shopping center bench. So.
But I'll be in to buy some tea shortly.
Okay.
So we're talking to about Ray Elsiter,
Brian Clark,
and his associate,
Gina Pasinesi.
Last time we talked to you two, Brian, you were going to trial for obstructing an officer, was it?
Yeah, talking back.
And you were known as a Christmas Eve criminal for having a cigarette on your person.
I was smoking in public, and that's why you started harassing me. And then you called my name in, and I had a warrant, so you arrested me.
And the outcome of all that, although it took you, five, six, I don't know how many court appearances, two or three?
About five.
And indeed, I saw a whole troop of people trailing with you, your witnesses, your relatives, her relatives, I mean, who knows? The entire community was coming into court, you know, McAdams Court. The result was they dropped all the charges, isn't that right?
Well, not guilty.
So there was a finding of not guilty?
There was a finding of not guilty, yeah.
Before judge or jury?
Yeah,
judge.
Yeah, it was only an infraction, so I couldn't even have a jury, so it's just judge.
That's correct, right, it was an infraction. I keep thinking of other cases.
It was an infraction. It was actually more serious. They told me to go to jail at first,
And did you voluntarily accept that, or did you ask it to be kept at a misdemeanor?
No, I voluntarily accepted it going down to an infraction.
I would have resisted it, because I'm an old curmudgeon, what can I say? Yeah, well, you get a jury trial, and it really makes them pay the legal process, but
yeah.
Still, apparently you won, which is a positive thing. What did the judge actually say in your case?
He said there's no evidence to support anything, so not guilty. Gave me a little lecture on...
he gave you a little lecture?
Yeah, a few minutes about staying back when an officer is doing his job, but yeah, he said there's no evidence and dropped it. Not guilty, whatever.
And how many supporters did you have in court when this was happening?
At the actual last day, it was just my mother and my stepfather. That was it. Nobody else showed up.
This is the case of Deputy Ferber, who has been renowned more recently for heading the hate crimes unit of the Sheriff's Department.
Really?
Yes.
Ferber.
Yes, Deputy Ferber is now the head
of the hate crimes unit.
What do you think of that?
Is this going to be played pretty soon?
Sunday.
I think Ferber's
dead. Since I have the opportunity, I'd like to inform anyone who's into punk that there's a killer show at Skinny McDougal's on Saturday the 25th. The Go Devils from Vancouver, Canada. Pawns from Santa Cruz. And
you have a big investment in this group?
Well, I'm in the Pawns.
Uh-huh.
I'm the drummer.
I'm really one of the Pawns.
We're all Pawns. And I think a band called The Gods Hate Kansas. Saturday the 25th. Free show. No money.
Cheap attack on the Midwest here. We'll ignore that. So what about Deputy Ferber being head of the crime scene? Head of the hate crimes division?
Well, if you're out there doing hate crimes, I would stop. Because that cop is dirty. He's a bad... He should be in jail for hate crimes.
Really? Why do you say that?
Well, on Christmas Eve, I mean, first of all, he harassed more than just me on Christmas Eve. At the time I was arrested, he was basically looking for anyone else to arrest. So he arrested Jerry, I don't know his last name, Henry. Jerry Henry. We both got arrested, and on the ride to the jailhouse, he proceeded to tell me how he was pagan and all this crap. And I was cussing him out, but, you know, I was angry. Saw my boyfriend, yeah, I'm Christian, I saw my boyfriend throw down on a car on Christmas Eve. And Ferber also asked my boyfriend Brian why he was ruining Christmas. He wasn't the one that killed Jesus Christ. And we took offense to that, you know.
What about anything subsequent to that or before that you wish to tell us about Ferber that we should know about?
Well, there's quite a few people who's had problems with Ferber, and like as far as being harassed for minor things.
He likes to harass young girls for smoking. What a pervert.
Yeah, there's definitely something to be said about that one. And and also, like, when we were dealing with Brian's court case, he like came up to Brian's mother and like got in her face and just was a real jerk. And then after like the day that all of Brian's witnesses, including myself, testified, he came out because Jerry Henry was there in case he had to testify. And started harassing Jerry Henry about his dog being in the back of the truck and how he didn't have all the safety codes and just all this crap and, gee, I hope your dog doesn't get killed soon, and just being a real jerk, you know. And he's just, he has no regard for anyone, and he's just out to get somebody for anything.
I've had my encounters with Deputy Ferber, but you, what's your name?
My name's Maya Churchill, and
you're a worker, Maya.
Yeah, I'm on my lunch break.
What kind of, what's your job?
I work at Carriedway in Aptos. It's a gourmet food takeout. And
you have to get paid high wages there,
sure. I'm comfortable, I'll say that. Yeah.
I was being sarcastic, but if that's true, it's great.
It's fun. Well, anyways, about Ferber, I guess this was right before what happened to Gina here.
Christmas Eve?
No, it wasn't Christmas Eve. It was a little bit before Christmas, and I was on my way to a job interview, and I was sitting in the SoCal parking lot of the church in SoCal, and I was smoking a cigarette, and I am underage, and I, you know, that's okay. And he approached me to give me a ticket, and I didn't resist at all. I said, yeah, you know, I'm busted. Give me a ticket. And he asked me which school I went to, and I said, I'm not a high school student, I go to Cabrillo College. And he didn't believe me, and he said that he was going to take me back up to the high school because I was truant. Which,
what time of day was it?
This was around 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Uh-huh. Where did all this happen take place?
This is in SoCal Village.
I see.
And
I happened to stop you? You were sitting smoking?
Yeah, I was just sitting smoking a cigarette. I was with my present employer waiting for her daughter to get out of high school.
Really?
Yeah, we were picking her up.
So your boss was with you?
My previous employer. Sorry.
You were working, where were you working then?
Oh, I was being a nanny, actually. But, and he proceeded to come over to me, tell my employer to get out of the way and to back off, and that he was going to take me to Cabrillo College, which I thought that was kind of silly because...
You mean to the high school?
No, Cabrillo College. He threatened to take me to college.
I see.
And I said, you're going to take me back to my college for smoking.
He offered to give you a college education.
I don't know what he was thinking.
Maybe best service.
After I explained to him that you cannot take someone back to their college for being truant, he threatened to take me to my house. And I said, you know, that's not going to do any good. I'm on my way to a job interview. My mother's not there. She knows I smoke. You know, this is not very productive. Why don't you just give me a ticket and we can get this over with? And he said, well, it looks like you lost the job. And he said to get in the back of the cop car. And I asked him why, because it's, you know, I don't think it's legal to arrest someone for underage smoking. I thought that was a little bit extreme.
You cannot take someone on an infraction offense unless she refuses to sign a ticket, unless she has refused to adequately identify herself, or unless she is engaging in the same conduct again immediately thereafter.
Yeah, I wasn't giving him any trouble at all, and he very forcefully told me to get the back of the car, and I asked him why, and he screamed at the top of his lungs that I was interfering with a official police investigation, and if I didn't be quiet right, or actually he told me to shut up. If I didn't shut up right then and there, he was going to take me to jail. And at that point, I started getting really upset. I was on my way to a job interview right before Christmas. I needed that money. I needed that job. And he, I think, used the fact that I was on my way somewhere to get even more leverage with me. And so he threw me in the back of the cop car.
Threw you, meaning he physically threw you?
Physically pushed me into the back of the cop car.
Did he hurt you in any way when he did?
No, it was just very rough. And and then he told my employer that I was going to be taken to jail and that I wasn't allowed to take my backpack or my things.
What did your employer think of all this?
She was furious. She was sitting on the sideline. She didn't really know what to do.
How old was she?
She's about 45 or so. She's a mother of a high school kid, so yeah. And then he proceeded to drive away with me in the back of the car. And
his prey was in the back of the car.
He said that he was going to take me to juvenile hall for smoking a cigarette. Uh-huh. And I was screaming and yelling in the back of the car, you know, this is not legal. This, you have to pull over right now and show me where it says in the book of laws that you can take me to jail for smoking a cigarette. And at that point, we were about a mile and a half down the road, and he pulled over when I said that because he knew that he was caught. And I wasn't gonna play his game. So he pulled over way out of my way to where I could not get to my job interview after that.
Where exactly did he leave you off?
He left me off on SoCal Drive towards Sweets in the Mood, the furniture store. And I had a job interview over in Capitola on 17th. And so...
About what time of day was this?
It was probably around 3:15, 3:30 by now.
Uh-huh.
And he stuck his head into the back of the car. He asked me if I was going to behave, and I asked him if he was going to behave. And while we were in the car, while I was yelling at him to pull over, he called me a annoying little brat. He was sick of me and sick of all these annoying little brats, I think is what he said. And I thought, you know, this is supposed to be a public servant here.
Sounds like hate crime against the young.
Yeah, I think he does have something weird with girls and smoking, honestly, because there's been a lot of cases like this where he'll seriously harass someone.
You know of other cases?
Well, Gina, me,
I seriously think it turns him on to harass girls.
Because I was not the only one smoking there. I mean, there was a lot of other high school kids around. I just happened to be a redhead, and I happened to be a girl, and there was a whole bunch of guys around me. He came right to me with that cigarette. He didn't ask anyone to put their cigarettes out, except for me. And it wasn't here. It wasn't
here.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't give him any trouble until he started breaking the law, pretty much.
Now, did you ever file a complaint about this?
I did. I filed a complaint. My employer filed a complaint, and my mother filed a complaint.
What has been the result of those complaints?
I've seen none yet. I haven't been real good in following
that. How long ago did you file a complaint?
It was before Christmas.
Well, your full name is?
Maya Ono Churchill.
And Maya, do you mind if we put this out over the air on a radio broadcast?
No, not at all. Officer Thurber needs to be stopped.
Stop him.
You need to know about him.
Stop him before he boo-boos again. Go ahead.
Question, this is going out to the public.
Who are you?
Yeah, my name is Becky Johnson.
Okay.
And I have a little problem with the show.
Okay, can you grab your camera for just a minute so we can talk and then I'm going to have to
get your statement on tape. It's not
you need to ask my permission first. Okay, I'm going to ask you guys to leave, please. Okay, I told you not to be okay. I'll be more than happy to work with you. You just need to work with me a little bit too.
Okay, well, you don't mind making an audio statement about what the story is out there.
First of all, I'd like you to turn off any kind of recording devices because I'd like to find out where you people are from because
I'm
a member of the Republic and we have to have a family. Actually, I have a right as a citizen and as a police officer not to be
video. No, that's not true. You're in a public area and this is a public station.
No, this is public area.
Well,
I
can ask to the public.
I can ask this is me at any time, so if you guys...
You can ask us to leave, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're here because we're having official business by asking a question about what your
policy is. And I'd be more than happy to talk to you about that on tape. Well, I'm not going to walk in my place of business and have a video camera on me and not know where you're from and who you are.
This is all of our
this is my place of business.
This is the community. You are a member. You work for the sheriff's
department.
Yes, I do. And the county
of
Santa Cruz.
That's right.
And you are a public employee. This is a public place.
I still have rights. I'm sorry if you don't have ideas.
I do have rights.
But your rights do not extend to not... I understand you, but I'm asking.
As a person.
I am more than happy to work with you guys, but you need to work with me and understand where I'm coming from. I'm just walking through the door and you have your video camera on me. That's kind of annoying, okay? I need to know who you are and where you're from, and I'll be more than happy to help you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we're kind of annoyed that the public seating is blocked off.
I don't know if you have talked to them at the store or at the liquor store, but I'm just doing construction. We have no involvement in that whatsoever.
Okay, because it's kind of happened to miss cleaning. I'm glad to clear that up if that's the case.
It's absolutely none of our doing. Okay, he's laying rock all out there. That's why it's being dropped off.
Oh, okay.
It's been blocked off since graduation, June 12th.
I'm telling you.
But as far as you know, it's not because of any temporary
suit. Not at all. Okay. It's against the law.
You
can't do that.
Wonderful. I appreciate it, Deputy Johnson.
Yes.
And again, well, it's a difficult position when you're a deputy, to be in a public position.
And what you hear there is myself and video journalist Becky Johnson in the sheriff's substation at Aptos asking Deputy Johnson why the public area in front of the liquor store is blocked off and has been blocked off since June, apparently around the same time that the stores were trying to get rid of Jerry Henry with different kinds of restraining orders and make sure he didn't talk to the young people there and advise them of their rights. And, of course, first she didn't want to be tape recorded and was threatening us with arrest and was threatening this and that, and then were telling us we were very discourteous. This, by the way, for all of you fledgling cop watchers out there, is how police will react to a public tape recorder, but it is completely legal to tape record someone in a public place where there's no expectation of privacy, even more so to tape record police officers, provided you're not interfering with business. You have to be careful you're not doing that. And, of course, we were the business in the office, so we weren't interfering with it. I suppose if she'd said she refused to talk to us and then went to the back of the room to type, we might have been accused of interfering with her typing abilities. But she didn't. The conversation actually continued for another half hour and went into issues around the sheriff's department's involvement in the DARE program, misinformation to the young around marijuana and the drug war. But that's really the subject for another show. I have tape now that I'm really not going to have a lot of time to play, so I'm just going to give you a snatch, so to speak, of it. It happened yesterday, and some of you avid listeners may have already heard the subject matter. It's Free Radio Santa Cruz at the demonstration against the California Association of Broadcasters, which is the group that is essentially stage managing of the National Association of Broadcasters, the FCC's attack on free radio stations. They're the people behind it. Let's hear a little of that. We aren't going to have time to hear all of it. Maybe Reckless will play some of it. She's coming on at 1:30. Maybe she can hear some of it. By the way, I want to point out that a donation from an anonymous donor for our phone has just come in. I want to thank him. He knows who he is, and he's actually encouraged me. I'm going to donate some money now. Maybe we'll get this phone turned back on again. So, you know, just loosen up your wallets, all you money bags out there, and pipe some money over to Free Radio Santa Cruz if you want to have an actual interacting phone line here on the air. Our voicemail number, if you want to let people know how to get a hold of your money, is at 427-4523. And if you want to just send in a check, it's P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz 95061. Better call first, though, because I'm not sure to what you would write out the check. I'm not sure where if we have an account and what name. My business skills are limited here. Let's hear a little of the Free Radio tape. And I guess we're going to have to postpone the tape with Tom Connors, the street magician, who is also starting a paper called Starstruck. You may have read about it in the Metro. He gave us a long interview, which we'll hope to play on Thursday. And we also have some interesting cuts from the last city council meeting. Here's a reminder, by the way. The next city council meeting is Tuesday, and it's the last city council meeting until September. The council takes its dreaded vacation in August, and they won't be around to face the music throughout August. Coming up on the agenda, and I'm not sure if it's the 3:30 or 7 o'clock agenda, on Tuesday is the issue of medical marijuana and an emergency ordinance. Actually, I don't know if it's going to be an emergency ordinance. It should be in order to be passed at that session. Otherwise, it won't pass until September, since all ordinances require two readings, as they put it, have to go through two council sessions. But it essentially empowers WAM. It deputizes WAM members to give out marijuana, which I think is an excellent idea. Now, if the police will only stop harassing needle exchange, perhaps we'll be back to square one again and we can start moving forward. We'll be talking about that on Thursday, but if you want to come to the council meeting, you should either go down to the library or contact the city clerk tomorrow to find out where on the agenda that issue is. Perhaps I'll call into Free Radio so it can be announced. It certainly deserves your support, and it probably will be a done deal beforehand, although it's hard to tell. It's always hard to tell with the city council. Interviews from Prescott, Arizona. Interviews from San Diego are also probably going to be postponed today. San Diego, as you know, has been under attack from police. The San Diego homeless. 11 homeless people have been shot or brutalized by police in the last 11 months. Three have been shot lethally in the last, I guess it's the last month. That's the stat from San Diego. And that may include a couple of a non-homeless person as well. There was a march against police violence down there a week ago Saturday, or a week ago Friday. No, a week ago Saturday, police moved in on the San Diego protest and told people, began confiscating their property. They couldn't sleep there. They couldn't be there. Protesters resisted, stayed. They took away protesters' signs. Protesters got an injunction from the ACLU, a court order that the ACLU, it actually wasn't quite a court order, but it was a consent agreement between the American Civil Liberties Union, the protesters, and the city attorney and the police, that stated they could have signs and they could close their eyes to meditate. So now they have the right to engage and have their political rights, but they can't eat and they can't sleep. So, sort of similar to how the ACLU deals with our own city. When we had our city council vigil, the only thing they supported us on was signs. The right to sleep, they felt, was secondary. One would hope that they got no sleep after that. And speaking of sleep, we are having our second Don't Sleep Tonight night in Santa Cruz, which is now being supported. We got a fax today from the San Diego protesters. The Don't Sleep Tonight night this time will be happening on July 31st, Friday night. And we are encouraging people in their homes to come on out and sleep in their driveways, which is illegal. So this will be an act of civil disobedience. If the police choose to, they can give you a ticket for sleeping in your own driveway or in your car in your own driveway. So we encourage you to fill the driveways on July 31st. Let the police and Dear Mike Rotkin, the swing vote on the city council, understand that Santa Cruz community does not support a policy that makes sleeping a crime. Santa Cruz community does not support a policy that criminalizes poor and homeless people. That's July 31st, Don't Sleep Tonight night, the second Don't Sleep Tonight night in Santa Cruz. And for more information, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Well, let's turn now to Free Radio Santa Cruz, Free Radio Monterey, Free Radio Berkeley, and even Free Radio San Francisco, or San Francisco Liberation Radio. I think some supporters from San Francisco showed up yesterday at Monterey to protest the California Association of Broadcasters meeting. And here is how some of it went.
So we're in downtown Monterey here on Madison Street, and we're marching with the group protesting the California Association of Broadcasters annual convention. Protesters are carrying signs, low power FM now, wealthy, non-wealthy need free speech. What's your name?
Etienne.
Etienne?
Yeah.
And are you a local? What's your
first? Yeah, I'm a local. Heard about this and read the paper this morning and said, hey, I better go check this out.
So there was a story in the paper this morning?
Yes, there was.
What exactly did that story say?
It detailed the dilemma of the Monterey Free Radio and essentially, well, it didn't announce this, but it said that this was happening. And
so what is that?
Come down and check it out.
What is happening?
Well, it's just a protest of broadcast standards by the FCC, which prevent low-cost, low-power, low-tech broadcast of whatever people want to broadcast and limits broadcasts to the wealthy. Doesn't seem fair to me.
And are you connected yourself with Free Radio Monterey?
Not at all. Just an interested citizen.
An interested listener, man.
Yes.
All right.
And actually, I never heard it until today.
Wow.
I just heard about it.
We've been listening to Monterey, Free Radio Monterey.
You have a Free Radio Berkeley t-shirt on, 104.1.
Yes.
Weren't you the original flag, sort of the motherlode station here?
The motherlode? The mothership?
The
motherlode, the
motherfucker, whatever. Oh, what am I saying? I guess.
We can say motherfucker.
We certainly can, but I don't know if that appropriately describes Free Radio Berkeley.
Sometimes it does.
Well, you aren't on the air these days. What's going on?
The judge ordered, Judge Claudia Wilkin in federal court ordered that we be off the air, and our landlord decided that he was going to agree with Judge Wilkin and basically say we couldn't broadcast. We are on the internet, however, www.freeradio.org. People can listen to us all around the world. We're getting back to our regular schedule after a short time off. We figured out how to broadcast directly on the internet and all that, how to netcast on the internet. Also, people not affiliated with us, but people who are sometimes broadcasting on 104.1, especially on Sunday night.
What's the kind of
group? People who, of course, would never violate the judge's injunction. They may violate the law, but they're not connected with Stephen Dunner for a Free Radio.
Well, it looks like you got quite a group of people here. You got about, what,
yeah,
5, 10, at least 15 or 20 folks,
yeah,
from Berkeley.
We're gonna go to the California Broadcasters Association right now and hand out leaflets and protest the fact that the California Broadcasters Association is part of the National Association of Broadcasters, which is harassed, which has asked the federal government to form a task force to shut down all the micro-power radio stations in the country.
Now, what sign are you carrying here? Let me take a look at
this. I'm carrying the sign that says
FCC
and NAB, the real pirates.
And that was Dean of Free Radio Berkeley yesterday in Monterey. I'm going to hope that maybe I can talk Reckless into using some of her time to play this tape, since she indeed is on this tape. I interviewed her, among other broadcasters, at the demonstration. And I'm going to spend the last few minutes, I got about 7 minutes left by my clock, to read a story from the Anderson Valley Advertiser of July 22nd called Mental Health's Death Squad by Mark Hyman. Particularly important considering the kind of killing that's been happening to people tagged mentally ill or developmentally disabled. We saw Happy John Dine shot dead by Officer Connor Carey in November of last year. Charles Vaughn Sr. was picked off or capped on a rooftop by police bullets from the ground in Seaside for allegedly menacing another officer on the roof with a corkscrew. Again, both these individuals had a sort of a mental health or developmentally disabled label. Here's another individual that was shot dead, this time more recently in Ukiah, a little bit from Mark Hyman. the writer. A Ukiah man with a long history of mental illness was shot and killed by a Ukiah police officer Thursday afternoon. The events leading up to the death of Marvin Noble, age 45, were witnessed by dozens of people along busy South State Street, many of whom had known Noble for years. Witnesses say Noble's killing at the hands of the Ukiah PD was unjustified and that the police officers involved caused the confrontation between them and Noble to escalate to lethal force. Underlying the eyewitness accounts was an often expressed fear of the Ukiah Police Department, bolstered by police investigators' insistence that witnesses not talk to anyone about what they saw that day. Marvin Noble, a 45-year-old black man from Ukiah, was shot and killed Thursday by Ukiah police, who have been directed to bring him in for a psychiatric evaluation by Mendocino County Mental Health. Noble had a long history of mental illness dating back to a 1981 incident in which he reportedly raped his ex-wife and threatened her and her two children with a sawed-off shotgun. Noble was found not guilty by reason of insanity and confined for 4 years to Atascadero State Mental Hospital. In 1985, he was released to Mendocino County Mental Health on what is known as the Conditional Release Program, CONREP. That same year, he experienced another psychotic episode and spent a short time in Napa State Hospital before being returned to the care of the county's mental health department. Since that time, Marvin Noble's conditional release status has been reviewed on a yearly basis. He had voluntarily signed on for another year of the program just days before his death, last Thursday, July 16, 1998. Mendocino County Mental Health Director Bob Wolf would not comment specifically about Noble's case, citing doctor-patient confidentiality, which he asserted extends even after death. Wolf said the legal authority for his office to direct the police to bring in a patient is contained in Welfare Institutions Code Section 5150, which allows mental health to make the decision that a person is a danger to themselves or others. Wolf would not say who had made this determination and spoke cryptically and abstractly of Noble, quote, decompensating psych talk for being off his meds as the reason for sending the cops out to bring him in. Wolf said there were three scenarios for forcefully rounding up a patient for evaluation. One, the most common is that a mental health worker would contact the patient and the police would not be involved. Two, if the worker thought there might be some reluctance on the part of the patient, the police would be asked to go along as a backup. And three, if the worker had reason to believe the patient would be resistant to coming in, the police would be notified of that and asked to bring him or her in. It is not known what information was given to the Ukiah police when mental health asked them to pick up Marvin Noble, and Wolf would not say why a caseworker who knew Noble did not accompany the police. Ukiah Police Chief John Williams is quoted in the Ukiah Daily Journal of July 17th as saying his officers only knew that Noble was a, quote, criminal commitment and that, quote, we usually don't have access to their mental health records. We depend on the information mental health gives us. This wasn't your typical contact to evaluate whether a patient is a danger to themselves or someone else. This was well above that, Williams said, implying that his officers were indeed told that Noble was dangerous. Yet Marvin